Hey, my name is Vanessa, and you're listening to Ano Alto, a podcast where we talk about diversity and representation in media. In this episode, we will be discussing cancel culture and whether or not the public should have a say in how an individual, celebrity or not, should be reprimanded for their actions. And today, I am joined by a few new guests, so we'll go ahead and meet them now.
Hello, everyone. I am Genesis Amaris Kemp. I am a visionary life coach, motivational speaker, podcast founder, and host of GEMS Podcast. And I'm also the author of Chocolate Drop in Corporate America, From the Pit to the Palace.
My name is Julia Washington. I am the host of Pop Culture Makes Me Jealous, which is a show that examines pop culture through the lens of race or gender, and sometimes both.
Todd Kukan, and I'm in the leadership lane, so to speak. I do a lot of work with corporate culture, corporate leadership, core values, communication, team building. I do it through speaking, coaching, teaching, and training.
I'm as familiar as one can be with cancel culture, so my opinion about cancel culture is sticky. As a society, there's an evolution that takes place. You know, the 1980s are vastly different from the 2020s, and what was acceptable then, a lot of it's not acceptable now. And so I lean towards, you know, we should study media and look at what media past was doing and how can we break down what that influence was, how it affected our perceptions, and then what can we do to grow from that? And how can we call out Hollywood in a way that allows that growth?
I feel like with cancel culture, sometimes people take things to the extreme or something can be taken out of context. Like you say one thing and then they want to cancel you from something that, you know, promotes your livelihood. Whereas if someone were to ask you a question or ask you to elaborate on it, then they could really see it from your point of view versus going with the preconceived notions or unconscious biases. And then before you know it, your career or your livelihood is ruined.
Well, I think, you know, people can speak in terms of, if you look at politicians, people can speak with their vote. In terms of the business community, people can speak with their feet. They may choose not to shop or go to that particular business. If it's a movie star, they can choose not to support their movie or whatever the case might be. I don't know that it should be a group of people that, you know, we rely heavily on their opinions. It seems like, and I don't know if this is I don't have any factual evidence, but a lot of times we only hear the negative voices. We don't hear the people who are supportive of something. Oftentimes don't like to say anything, particularly if it's extremely confrontational, because then look, they may get sucked into it some way and have property damage or, you know, so there's that. That's unfortunate that the people who may have a more balanced answer oftentimes won't speak up for fear of repercussions in their lives. So it's really a, you know, kind of a dangerous spot that we're in with again, communication and listening and how we respect each other and who they are and your thoughts and opinions.
People love to hate.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. And I love, one of my favorite quotes is Martin Luther King. He said something to the effect that, you know, hate will never drive out hate. Love is the only thing that can do that. You know, you can scream and yell at each other, but it's not going to change anything. You have to figure out a way to love each other, whatever that, not love in the relationship sense, but love in the human sense.
I look at, has there been growth? Was this person coming from a place of, you know, they're 20 and dumb because who has everything figured out at 20 or 25? You know, is the person in question still engaging in harmful behaviors and actions? Are they still making homophobic content? Are they still making content that reaffirms negative stereotypes? So I see it more as a case-by-case basis rather than like a, I'm going to cancel everyone who has a problem or who has been problematic. The example I used to use, which I actually need to confirm if it's still a valid example, but I will use it here as for the purpose of this conversation. Years ago, Kevin Hart was tapped to host the Academy Awards. A homophobic tweet had surfaced, as they do, and he apologized and Ellen had him on his show and they did this big thing about how he's, you know, a man of the people. My issue with this was he still had recent, very recent content to that incident not the tweet, but at the tweet coming out timeframe that had homophobic content in it, that still had homophobic jokes. So this tweet that was however many years old, you put it next to his most recent film that had homophobic jokes in it. To me, that suggests that his attitude hasn't changed. There was no growth. So that bothered me because I was like, Ellen, why are you bringing this guy up to be like, she basically gave her, you know, gave him her seal of approval, and his movie still had issues and negative ideas about, and it's like passive jokes too, right? For the punchline, which again is, you know, be smart about your comedy, guys. Come on. You don't have to put somebody down just to be funny. So that was hard for me. Like, that's an example that's hard for me because I'm like, he didn't grow. He didn't change. He apologized for it, but he was still engaging in behavior that was harmful to a community. Whereas, you know, had he grown and changed and, you know, was like, I've learned from the error of my ways and that's not my comedy anymore, and his body of work proves that, then to me, that's different. And to me, that's saying, okay, you've grown. You have realized the error of your belief system or whatever you want to call it.
It's interesting because people have the right to change, right? But if somebody posts, it kind of gets back to how, the severity of it. If someone posts something 10 years ago that was, you know, very racist towards, you know, a group of people or towards a particular person, do they deserve to be, you know, U.S. senator or president or whatever the case might be? And part of it is, were they apologetic about it? How was there remorse?
I think comedy is a very hard line to kind of tread because you have to make fun of someone or you either make fun of yourself.
Yeah, you know, and that's one reason why I love Steve Martin, because he kind of goes for a different type of comedy. And that's why I think his comedy holds up over time, because he's not talking about current, he's not hitting pop culture in the way that some other comedians do, right? Like, his commentary is a little different. And my son and I watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles a couple months ago, and it held up because they weren't making jokes based on stereotypes. They weren't making jokes about a population of people because of their cultural differences. It was just commentary on life, on travel. And so a lot of those things still rang true. Trains running late, trains not being on time, cars not working, the way car dealerships work. You know, there's certain types of scenarios that are kind of universal that you can build comedy out of without putting down a community and reinforcing stereotypes. Like, back to my example of Kevin Hart, it was like, stop talking to this guy until he figures out that he, homophobia is bad. He hasn't learned yet. We need him to learn. It's almost like, you know, when your grandma puts you in the corner because you need to learn your lesson. But at the same time, it's one of those things where, where's our space to grow and to learn? Because culture changes with every generation, with every decade. I'm rewatching How I Met Your Mother right now, which first aired in 2005 and ended in 2014. And those early seasons, holy moly, like the jokes they made, very homophobic, very sexist, very racist. But in 2005, no one was calling it out. We accepted it as comedy and funny, and the show is brilliant. But in 2022, I'm sitting here like, wow, that's deeply offensive for the Asian community. And that's deeply offensive for women everywhere. And I do think cancel culture is different for women. There's already disadvantage that exists for women. So the lens is harsher on women than it is for men. The expectations and the standards that we are expected, that we are supposed to live up to, is not fair in comparison to what the expectations are for men.
I think they're about the same, because anyone could be quote unquote cancel culture, depending on what they do, what they say, or, you know, what they feed into.
That's one reason why on my show, I always bring the context, what was going on in culture at the time, right? And what were they saying about it at the time? And then how can we figure out how that influenced this particular generation, who was the right age and the demographic for it, and what we think today, and how much deprogramming do we have to do because of it? When we look at stuff from the 80s too, a couple episodes I did, we really got into some John Hughes movies, because he was, you know, praised at the time for being this innovative voice for teens. But when we look at it today, you're just like, this is icky, specifically 16 Candles. But when I dug in and was looking what critics were saying at the time about the film, stuff for teens didn't exist in the way that stuff for teens exists now. Even 20 years ago, the programming that exists for children didn't exist. I mean, I grew up with Saturday morning cartoons and TGIF, like that was it. And TGIF was family content, not specifically for children. And Saturday morning cartoons was for children. And then when you look at the violence that takes place in those TV shows, so it's that this didn't exist for us before, and now it does. So it opened the door, but also it's got some problems.
Most definitely from the baby boomers time to before the baby boomers to now the millennials and the Gen X, the Gen Zers. I think over time, society has gotten looser and they're more vocal about certain things. Whereas back then, there were certain no-nos, like we can't talk about that, that can't be played on TV or et cetera. And now things are more fluid. And you're able to really engage in those difficult as well as courageous conversations because people really do want to learn. They want to move the needle forward. They don't want to go back in time and repeat. They want to rinse and repeat, but get better.
You know, we're a society that has listening, active listening is becoming more of a challenge. And if we would just give people the opportunity to speak and then listen to what they're saying rather than trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to say back to you, right? What you know, like you come back from vacation or work and people talk about their vacations and people try to one-up each other. Well, we did this and we did that. And that, you know, it's the same thing in kind of this. Everybody's trying to outdo one another and really not interested in listening. And I don't agree with everybody that I'm friends with, but I'm willing to listen to their viewpoint and their values. Same with my daughters. My daughters, you know, we have different thoughts and viewpoints on things, but I'm going to listen and respect their opinions. I don't have to agree with them. I don't have to vote the way they vote. They don't have to vote the way I vote. That's what's great about our society. We have that freedom. But when you don't make your decisions based on all of the facts, you base it on a 5-second video clip, that's where things get a little bit dangerous. It's all about education, understanding, and again, respecting differences. It, you know, everybody is a little bit different. And I'm sure if we started talking about our politics or religion or those sorts of things, we'd find out we're different. But you are who you are and I am who I am, and we respect each other, just like our conversation now. Many, many, many years ago, you're not allowed to advertise for smoking on TV anymore, in magazines, whatever. I can't remember the exact laws and all that. And so there have been situations where different rules or laws have been made. The challenge, again, is finding that right level. Again, the answer is it depends if they should be or not, and how serious and who's going to determine how serious that is. So I think there needs to be something done, but I wish I had the answer. If I did have the answer, you and I wouldn't be talking. I'd be in vacation, you know. Yeah. I'd be in the Caribbean with all the money I'd earn from solving the problem. But it's tough. You know, you're talking about people and their values and opinions.
You know, again, it's sticky. Norman Lear comes to mind. A lot of the shows that he created, All in the Family, The Jeffersons, and a handful, you know, One Day at a Time, the original One Day at a Time. When you look at those original shows, some of the episodes are pretty, like, it's not great representation compared to today's standards. You know, on the other side of that coin, no one else was willing to make television for non-white people. So it's hard because the 70s were not a great time for people of color and minorities. But at the same time, the way that we praise Norman Lear, how should that look now, right? Like, you can't really get too closely to examine his work anymore because you might get disappointed in what it looks like compared to what we know today. I'm not saying that we have to have constant access to it. I'm saying that I think it's important that we examine what that looked like at that time so we can understand the context around it on a bigger scale. Some Great. Things are just blatantly terrible, which I will not name because I will not give them space.
Do you think there should be a cap on how much time has passed? Say, for example, someone said something rude or offensive 5-10 years ago. Do you think there should be a limit to how far back people should go into their history?
Yeah, I would say maybe about 10 years because, and the reason why I picked 10 years, because that's when you have a high school reunion, 10 years.
10 years is a long time. And a lot of people change within a year. Imagine 10 years. They're a very different person to who they were.
I don't think it can be as simple as a time limit. I think when I make my decisions about other people or other topics, I take that into account, right? People do change and people do become remorseful. You know, someone may have said something 20 years ago, and maybe now they're doing charity work, volunteering for that particular sector that they, you know, had these negative comments to say before. So obviously there was some learning. They made a mistake, they failed, they learned from it. And now they've even turned around and they're helping that particular organization. So, you know, in a case like that, I think you need to give people that second chance. If it's a continual trend, you know, then I think you've got an issue there where they're continually making negative comments. But if someone who's done something, they've done it, you know, once, they've learned from their mistake, they've shown remorse, I think we should be able to give them some credit for being human and for a willingness to try to learn, improve, enhance themselves.
Oh, most definitely. Because if that information resurfaces, then they're branded by association. They already have a brand. And if people are supporting your brand and they know what you did, even though it was years ago, is that still who you are? Or is that something that you have been forgiven? Or if you did say it in the past, just own up to it and just let your current following know that, okay, this was a mistake. You know, I was young and immature then, and I said this for this reason, but this is not who I am, because people evolve just like times and seasons change.
Do you think that the public should have a say in how an individual should be reprimanded? Because when people get canceled, it's not the management, it's not the organization that they're working for, it's the public who's deciding, okay, you're going to be canceled. Do you think that it should be the public?
No, because the public people may not have liked you from the get-go. So why is your fate in their hands?
I think people need to be accountable for their behavior, past or present and present. In every system, there's consequences, right? If you cheat at school, there's a zero tolerance policy for plagiarism. If you run a red light, you know, you're going to get a ticket if the camera takes your picture when you're going through the intersection. You know, there's consequences for everything to an extent, but not all consequences are fair and just, because the system isn't designed for intersectionality. The system isn't designed for gray. And so that's where it gets really hard, because then if everybody has an opinion on what the punishment should be or the actions should be, how do we navigate that? My fundamental belief system might be different from your fundamental belief system, and we may not be able to come to an agreement on how a person should be reprimanded.
I think that there has to be, you know, some protection. Again, I understand and respect free speech and some of those topics, but there's a point, you know, I mean, like, you know, you talk about yelling fire in a crowded theater, that's not free speech. So the challenge with any of this, and particularly the cancel culture, where do you draw the line? Where do we say this is and this isn't right? And who's going to make that judgment? So it gets to be a really challenging area. I think as a culture, and I think this ties in, we've gone away from, you know, people are innocent until proven guilty because of things like social media. Information gets out there very quick, and kind of a silly example, not a life kind of example, but there was a situation. I'm a alumnus of University of Wisconsin, and there was a situation with our basketball team and another basketball team where there were some things done. And I was very interested in it because I know the coach from Wisconsin. And it was interesting listening to the different sportscasters and sports, quote unquote, experts talk about it, because you could tell what they had or hadn't watched. If you knew what was happening in the game, knew what was happening before the moment of the incident, and knew what happened after the incident, you'd have a whole different opinion. The other coach who was involved in the incident apologized a day later in writing and misspelled the person's name that they did the written apology for. And we're talking about the Big Ten Conference, which is a big entity in the sports world. And, you know, so how sincere is that? And this sometimes happens with a cancel culture. They get a segment of the information or a segment of the video of the whole piece, so they don't have a full understanding for it. And they're making judgments based on incomplete information sometimes. And that's a little bit worrisome, but that's, again, that's part of what we're dealing with social media, and people's lives can be ruined unjustly, and careers and businesses. And so it's a big challenge.
another case was where they were filming a movie. I forget the actor's name. And someone was shot with a...
Oh, yeah. The Alec Baldwin situation. Yes. Unrest. Yeah.
Someone died.
Yeah.
It wasn't intentional, but someone died. Yeah. Should he go to prison? But then people are looking at, well, he's a celebrity. So of course he's not going to go to prison because he has this access.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, no, he should go to prison so that he's made an example of.
And that's back to the whole, you know, the system isn't designed for intersectionality. Alec Baldwin is a white privileged male. The system's going to work in whatever favor for him because it's designed to keep him safe. It is not designed to keep people like you and me safe.
I'm kind of interested in how that situation is going to turn out, whether or not he's going to go to jail.
I agree, because, you know, the Baldwins were already in a whole heap of controversy as it is with his wife claiming to be, I think she said she was from Spain specifically or had like roots in, you know, being Latina. And then it turns out she wasn't. She was culturally appropriating. Like, I don't know what I can't with the Baldwins. Sometimes
that's a big, bold statement to make. And then turns out that it's like, yeah, you were lying. That's not something you joke about. That's interesting. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, girl, it was a hot mess. She even got onto Instagram Live a couple times to defend herself. I'm just surprised she was able to go as long as she did claiming those statements. Even her husband got on and was like, yeah, honey, I know you're from blah, 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 and all these things. And you know, it was just like, that's not true. I'm shocked. Like, if I were to come out and be like, this is who I am, I'm sure there's tons of people who would come out of the woodwork and be like, she's lying. She's lying about where she came from. That is not who she is. So it's surprising to me when famous people can get away with that.
Yeah. And then to come back to the movie that they did with Rust, people are like, he should go to jail, but he's not because he has privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? It might happen again because they didn't reprimand him and they're going to look back on his case and be like, well, he didn't go to jail. So why should I?
It sets a precedent. That's the other part too, right? We're all in our country. We're always looking at, well, what's the precedent? And if there is none, it's like, how do we establish a precedent? And again, he's a white privileged male. If the precedent is set based on his experience, it's just establishing a precedent that is to the advantage of people who are white and wealthy.
Because then maybe someone of color is going to be in a similar situation and they're going to be led at a disadvantage because they're a person of color.
Yep. You know, when Passing was released by Netflix in November of 2021, a friend of mine and I had a really interesting conversation about it because the internet went crazy about who they cast to play these roles. And the whole concept of passing is you have women of color, specifically Black women, who are passing as white. One is out of convenience and one just straight out like she's living her life as a white woman. And it's 1929. So the world was not good for women or women of color. And one of the things that Rebecca Hall commented on, she was not originally desirable as the director, but her mom, her family history is rooted in passing. Her grandfather was passing. Her mother kind of alluded to the fact that they came from African American descent. She said she was raised by people who lived their life passing. So she is a byproduct of that, right? And then the internet just trashed who was cast and all of these things. And my friend and I were like, how hard and frustrating must it be now to be an artist and pour your heart and soul into getting something funded and then made and then finding distribution and then Twitter comes for you because they don't like something about it. Like, that's got to be devastating. But at the same time, you know, there's some validity to how people feel about representation. So where's the balance? Where do we find the middle line where we're not completely being awful to artists, but we're also finding a way to keep them accountable?
I think another good example is Robert Pattinson. People, again, on Twitter were just like, we don't like it. And then now, like you said, and a lot of people have said, he's actually really good. I feel like it should just be left at that. Let's just watch it first and then give an opinion instead of giving an opinion first, like just on appearance or previous history. Like, a lot of people have seen Twilight. That's all I've known him from. People were bashing on him because that's all they've known him from.
Mm-hmm.
they have this prior history, and they're like, he's, you know, Edward Cullen, and then Batman, the very big jump of not only genres, but characters.
Yeah. And isn't the point of acting is to get into being somebody else?
That's his job.
Right. And we get frustrated as a culture too, when somebody's typecast, they always play the same person. So again, where's the line? You know, you're upset that this one particular person is playing the same person over and over and over again in every movie and every TV show. But as an actor, I have experience with stage acting. I don't want to play the same character every time. When I'm reading scripts, I'm always like, who do I think that I can be? How can I turn myself into this character and be the most believable? You know, and we're not giving space for actors to do that, which I think is kind of a bummer, because that's the point of the craft, is how convincing can you be in this character?
Thank you for listening to the 7th episode of A New Alto. Join me next time, where I will be joined with new guests and new topics to talk about. Listen to us online at rsuradio.com. You can follow us on Instagram at A New Alto Podcast.